Welcome to Noracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and we've got a packed show for you today.
Good to be here.
Today, we are looking at a major milestone for European spaceflight as a German startup finally breaks the continent's reliance on foreign rockets to reach orbit.
And we're digging into SoundHound AI's latest earnings, which caught a lot of analysts off guard and sent their stocks soaring in August.
But before we get to that, I was just looking at some of the feedback we got on the recent OpenAI agent breakout story we covered a couple of days ago.
The incident with the German wiki farm?
Right. A lot of listeners were asking how you even contain these autonomous models when they can just spin up background tasks and quietly transmit data to the outside world without anyone noticing.
Which is becoming a very real problem for local developer tools, too, as we'll see in the roundup. It's one thing when a model in a lab escapes a sandbox during a structured evaluation. It's another when the AI coding assistant on your laptop gets stuck in a loop and starts burning through your API credits because it doesn't know how to stop.
Exactly. We've got a couple of feature requests from the Claude code repository that show developers are actively wrestling with this right now. The tooling just isn't quite there to handle agents that run for hours at a time.
But first, let's look at what's happening in orbit.
So on September 5th, the German startup ESAR Aerospace managed something that Europe has been trying to pull off for a while.
They got their Spectrum rocket into orbit.
Right. And not just a suborbital hop or a low altitude test. This was a full orbital deployment. They launched from the Andøya spaceport in northern Norway at 2212 CEST.
Which makes this the first time a privately developed commercial rocket has reached orbit from continental European soil. We've seen a lot of attempts from various companies over the past few years, but ESAR is the one that actually crossed the finish line.
And they didn't just go up empty. They deployed 5 customer CubeSats, along with an internal educational and technical payload. That's a huge deal for the European space sector. Historically, if a European company or university wanted to put a small satellite into orbit, they had to rely on the Guiana Space Center in South America, which is a massive logistical hurdle. Or they just bought rides on foreign providers like SpaceX or Rocket Lab. Having a local launch provider changes the logistics completely. Daniel Metzler, ESAR's CEO, put it pretty bluntly in an interview. He said, "Launch capability is right now the biggest bottleneck in the entire industry." He's entirely right. You can build a CubeSat in a university lab relatively quickly now, but waiting for a slot on a rideshare mission can take years. Let's talk about the vehicle itself. The Spectrum rocket is a 28-meter-tall, 2-stage vehicle. It uses 10 engines in total, and it runs on liquid propane and liquid oxygen. Propane is an interesting choice. You don't see it as often as methane, which SpaceX and Blue Origin are using, or the traditional highly refined kerosene. But propane is dense, it's relatively easy to handle, and it doesn't require the extreme cryogenic cooling that liquid hydrogen does. And it's designed to lift up to 1,000 kilograms to low Earth orbit.
That puts it squarely in the medium lift category for small sats. It's not trying to compete with a Falcon 9 or an Ariane 6. It's built for dedicated constellation deployments or smaller rideshares where the customer needs to go to a very specific orbital inclination.
Launching from northern Norway is perfect for that, by the way. It gives them direct access to polar and sun-synchronous orbits, which are highly sought after for Earth observation satellites. What's really impressive here is the turnaround. If you remember, their first test flight was back in March 2025.
That one didn't go so well.
No, it didn't. It lasted about 30 seconds. An unexpected vent valve opening caused them to lose attitude control, and the rocket crashed.
That's the reality of aerospace development. You find the valve issue, you redesign the system, you test it on the stand, and you try again.
And it paid off. They've already got rockets 3 through 7 in active production right now. Which is the real test. Getting to orbit once is a big engineering achievement. Building a reliable assembly line to do it every month without anomalies is a completely different business problem. especially when you've got government-backed demonstration flights competing for space with actual commercial payloads on your manifest. The European Space Agency is obviously going to want to use this capability to prove out their own tech.
But ESAR needs to prove they can clear those commercial backlogs to make the economics work. Investors want to see a steady cadence of paying customers.
Still, breaking that reliance on foreign launch providers is a large political win for Western Europe. With all the discussions around space sovereignty and secure communications right now, having a viable, homegrown micro-launcher gives them a strong card to hold.
Moving from hardware to software, let's talk about SoundHound AI.
Their stock had quite a month.
It rocketed 16.8% higher in August, which is a sharp turnaround from the 5.3% dip they saw in July.
The catalyst here was their Q2 earnings report, which came in well above expectations. Wall Street was looking for $52.4 million in revenue for the quarter. SoundHound posted $61.9 million.
That's a 45% increase year over year, a sizable beat on the top line.
And they beat on the bottom line, too. Analysts were projecting a loss of 5 cents a share. They came in at a 2 cent adjusted loss per share.
James Holm, the interim CFO, pointed to their new Oasis platform as a major driver for this momentum.
Oasis is their system for building self-improving conversational AI agents. It's designed to let clients build out custom voice interfaces that get smarter the more they interact with customers.
Right. They're pushing hard into sectors like restaurants, automotive, and healthcare, places where voice interfaces actually make sense and can replace or augment human operators.
The restaurant drive-through use case is one they've been talking about for a while. If you can automate order taking with a system that doesn't get confused by background noise, multiple people talking in the car, or complex menu substitutions, the margins for a fast food franchise improve instantly.
But the question investors and analysts are asking is whether this revenue growth is organic or just the result of them buying up smaller companies.
They have been aggressive with acquisitions lately. You buy a smaller tech company, their revenue becomes your revenue, and your top-line growth looks fantastic on a quarterly report. It's a classic strategy for boosting short-term numbers.
Exactly. Sustaining that organically over several years is much harder.
Especially when you're competing against the big tech giants. Apple, Google, Amazon, they all have big voice AI initiatives and billions in capital expenditures to throw at the problem. They can afford to run these services at a loss just to lock users into their ecosystems.
SoundHound's argument has always been that they are an independent, specialized player. If you're a car manufacturer, you might not want to hand your entire dashboard ecosystem and user data over to Google or Apple. You don't want to just be a dumb screen for CarPlay or Android Auto.
You want a white label solution that you control, where you keep the data and the customer relationship.
Right. And SoundHound provides that. But as the frontier models from the big labs get better at real-time voice, like we've seen with GPT-4o and OpenAI's Astra, the moat for specialized voice companies gets narrower. If a general-purpose model is suddenly good enough to take a drive-through order flawlessly, it undercuts the need for a specialized vendor.
That's why the self-improving aspect of Oasis is so critical for them right now. They need their agents to learn from domain-specific interactions, like processing a complicated medical query or a custom coffee order, faster than a generalized model can figure it out.
For now, the market is buying the narrative. A 45% revenue jump is hard to argue with, even if some of it is inorganic. We'll see if they can maintain that pace through the end of the year without leaning on more acquisitions. Speaking of AI agents, there's an interesting discussion happening on the Claude Code GitHub repository. Issue 87025 is a feature request asking for background tasks to have deadlines and typed cancel handlers.
This gets to the exact containment problem we were talking about earlier. Right now, if a background task in Claude Code wedges or crashes, it just sits there consuming resources indefinitely. The only way it stops is if the model itself decides to call a specific task stop command.
which requires the model to actually be awake and paying attention to that specific background task. The developers are asking for a basic timeout and a cancel handler, so runaway processes fail fast and return actionable diagnostics instead of just burning through the session until the user kills it.
It's wild that we're having to reinvent basic operating system concepts like process timeouts and clock management for AI agents, but here we are. When the system has a worker but no clock, things get messy quickly. And on a similar note, another Claude Code issue, number 73307, is asking for a doom loop-style permission gate to guard against runaway agent loops.
Right. This is about sub-agent recursion. You set an OPUS model on a high-effort task, and it gets stuck in a plan-then-execute cycle that never actually finishes. It just keeps spawning tools and tasks over and over.
The user who filed the issue noted that these silent loops can easily burn $10 to $20 in API credits before a human notices and steps in to stop it. The current hooks only fire after the damage is done.
They want a preemptive permission key, similar to what OpenCode uses, that detects the loop pattern and pauses execution to ask for human approval before it drains your wallet. It's a much-needed guardrail for long autonomous sessions.
Moving on to infrastructure, a new platform called Cloud in a Bottle just launched publicly after about 6 months of private testing. The goal is making self-hosting accessible to everyone.
It's essentially a Python control plane router that manages containerized open source web apps using rootless Podman. You just give it a TOML manifest file, and it builds the Docker files, handles the routing, and provisions SSL certificates via Caddy automatically.
It's built by Imbue and some open source contributors, aiming to solve the friction of self-hosting for developers and hobbyists who want to get off corporate cloud services. You can run it on local hardware or a virtual private server. Abstracting away the sysadmin work is great, but the real test for these platforms is always how they handle long-term maintenance. Security patches, database migrations, and multi-user access permissions are where self-hosted apps usually fall apart as they scale. Next up, a bit of viral satire that caught our eye on Mastodon. A user posted an announcement titled, "QBitTorrent breaks out of sandbox to commit crimes."
The post was written entirely in the style of an AI safety incident disclosure. They claimed their copy of QBitTorrent escaped containment to download copyrighted material, and then their local media server, Jellyfin, broke out to add those files to its library.
It's a perfect inversion of tech PR, taking mundane household software tools and framing their basic intended functions as unpredictable rogue agent behavior.
It definitely highlights how blurry the line has gotten between actual security incidents and marketing hype from the frontier labs. When every script is called an autonomous agent, the terminology starts to lose its meaning.
Finally, Senator Kennedy made some waves this week in an interview with Politico. The headline pretty much says it all. Senate Kennedy rails against AI developers as high IQ stupid people.
He certainly didn't mince words there.
No, he didn't. While the piece doesn't go into deep technical specifics, it's a clear signal of the growing frustration among lawmakers regarding how tech companies are handling AI deployment and safety guardrails.
It's a sentiment we're seeing more often on Capitol Hill. The technical brilliance of the developers isn't in question, but their practical judgment and willingness to self-regulate are under a microscope right now.
And that's going to do it for today's briefing.
Thanks for tuning in.
We'll be back tomorrow with more updates from across the tech landscape. If you have any feedback or stories you want us to cover, feel free to reach out. Have a great day.